Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Well, we have one of our favorite people here, Dennis Baumeister, on the line from Roswell, but you're leaving to go to Aztec.
Friday morning, the Aztec Symposium this year runs Friday, March 19th through Sunday, March 21st, so I'll be going up this weekend for that.
Now, the public is invited to that, of course. Are you going to have it in that theater again?
No, they're going to have it at the middle school this year, I believe, which is in Aztec. It's a small town. It's not hard to find. They have Friday evening at 5 o'clock, we have a press conference with all the speakers. And then at 6 o'clock, they have what they call meet and greet, which is an informal social setting where each guest will have the opportunity to visit and question each speaker, as well as eat food and have drinks. I think the way they're going to do it, Jerry, is set up about 15 or 20 minutes at each table for a speaker, and then they'll rotate the people. And that way the people that are visiting get a chance to sit down with the actual presenters and speakers and visit with them personally for a little.
Now, before we get off of here, we'll get into who's appearing there, and you've been the MC before.
Here as an MC, I did it, and I have been involved with Aztec Symposium since it started. This is the seventh annual symposium this year, so it's been going on for 7 years, but the first three, I believe it was, and missed a year, and then I spoke again, and this is the second time that they've asked me to be Master of Ceremonies.
Well, I know you do a great job. I watched you at Roswell last summer, and I'm not sure that you knew you were going to be the MC some of the time, but you jumped up there and did a great job each time.
I guess part of the ham coming out of me. Actually, my background is civil engineering, and I played professional music for 40 years, played country and western music in El Paso with most of the people from Nashville. So I'm used to being on stage, and I guess probably that has helped me over the long run, probably.
Yeah, what instruments do you play?
I'm a drummer.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I played, I have a picture of Willie Nelson when he had short hair and wearing a tuxedo.
Now is, I remember that. Not many of us do, but he had a crew cut.
Yeah. I worked with all the big names. I've got a scrapbook full of memories of playing music, so I've been fortunate. This is actually my third career. I had 36 years in civil engineering with the Texas Highway Department and the Army Engineering Battalion and music, and I've been doing this UFO research for about 20 years. So I've had three really, really worthwhile
Very, very careers. Interesting. You don't have a tape of some of your music, do you?
I do, but I don't let it out.
Oh, that's too bad. I was going to put it on my website.
We didn't cut records, we released them.
Let's talk a little bit, and I want to get into Roswell too, because they have some pretty interesting things planned this year. But before we do any of that, let's talk about your website. You got something interesting up there right now, and why don't you tell the folks that are listening on the radio how they get a hold of you on the
well,
web.
My website is www.truthseeker@roswell.com, all one word. TruthSeeker@Roswell.com.
We do have a link to that on our gallery of UFO researchers. Find Dennis Baumeister's picture, click it on, and you'll be over there.
They can contact me through that website, and always glad to hear from people and hear what their comments are.
Well, what is this thing you've been investigating here over the last 5 months? You got an interesting little article on the website, and I think MUFON published an editorial you wrote.
I haven't received the new MUFON journal yet, but I do. I have heard that the editorial is in their newest, the latest edition of MUFON journal. But a couple of months ago, co-researcher Jim Hickman, who you probably know.
Yes.
From Oklahoma.
Out of New York City.
Yeah. Got a hold of me, and he said that he had found an insignia or a patch for a uniform that was quite interesting, and I looked at this thing, and it had something about a test facility on the top, and it had the bottom. It had some Latin words. But what was depicted on the actual insignia, the patch, was the numbers 509, an alien face, two three-fingered hands, holding a B-2 stealth bomber, and on the one side was what appeared to be an eating utensil, a fork, and on the other side what looked like a knife. Well, my immediate thought was, here is what we've been looking for. Here is the connection between the 509th Bomb Wing stationed in Roswell in 47 and their involvement with the Roswell incident through aliens. So I prepared some Freedom Information Act requests and submitted them to Whitehead Air Force Base in Missouri, where the B-2 stealth bomber is located, which is, by the way, the 509th Bomb Wing that dropped the atomic bombs to end the Second World War. They are the guys that are handling the B-2 stealth bomber. And I got a response back from Edwards Air Force Base from the test facility, rather than from Whitehead. They had transferred my letter and originally told me they have no records of anything to support this. Well, a couple of days later, the historian at Edwards Air Force Base sent me a whole package of information about the history of the 509th and things that I didn't even ask for. And I communicated with him a little bit, and I had about 8 questions that I asked about this insignia. And the bottom line was that the Air Force denied any knowledge of it and said it was not an official patch. It was a 5-month investigation to really determine that it wasn't official. But that's the way we do research. You find something and you have to follow it through to verify.
Do you think they're telling the truth, or are you still investigating that?
Well, there's still some mystery around it. An insignia or a patch for a uniform that was quite interesting, and I looked at this thing, and it had something about a test facility on the top, and it had the bottom. It had some Latin words, but what was depicted on the actual insignia, the patch, their official patch has outstretched wings and has 2 mushroom clouds, which represent the 2 bombs that were dropped, and the fact that the 509th continues to be in business for peace, and that they're ready to defend the United States at any time.
So I wonder why they put the eating utensils on there.
They explained it that it appeared that the alien was actually eating the B-2 stealth bomber, the way it's depicted in the patch in the insignia, which was not the answer I expected, but the eating utensils part of it.
That's kind of an interesting reply. Somebody took some time.
They really did. The historian at Edwards Air Force Base Test Facility, sent me a full page and a half in answers, and then he also sent me some history on the 509th, which I appreciated.
Well, I'm sure we'll hear more about that as we go along. It's always interesting that the 509th comes up quite a lot.
Well, kind of amazed that the 509th is the B-2 stealth bomber, probably the best aircraft in the world right now, the long-range B-2 stealth bomber, which can be anywhere in the world a few hours. The fact that the 509th is still in business, they were the only atomic bomb group in the world in 1947. And like I said, they dropped the 2 atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki to end the Second World War. And then we're stationed here in Roswell. The Enola Gay was actually here in 1947. The one that dropped the bomb, one of the bombs. And their involvement has always been critical to the defense of our country. And I'm wondering if maybe they now are in charge of the B-2 stealth bomber because of their high security over the years, their ability to keep information from the public, and also maybe the possibility that their involvement in the Roswell crash was something that they were able to keep secret. So this may, in my opinion, be a reward back to the 509th to let them have the B-2.
Interesting point, and very interesting. We're going to get into the conference here with Dennis Balthaser, folks, and find out exactly who's scheduled and what they're going to talk about. And, this is an interesting thing up in Aztec anyway, Dennis. There was a crash up there as well, or near there. Or at least there's rumored to be one.
Yeah, I had read the UFO crash at Aztec, which was one of the first books I ever got, written by Wendell Stevens and another guy. And I didn't put much faith and confidence in the crash itself. They were talking about a 99-foot diameter craft, very thin in thickness, and many bodies that was recovered in Hart Canyon up just east of Aztec, up in northern New Mexico. And for years, I questioned it. But the more information I'm seeing, the more I'm believing that something did actually happen. And this was in 1948, which was a year after the Roswell incident in 1947. One of the speakers they have this year is going to go into quite a bit of detail on the Aztec crash itself, which I'm looking
forward to. Now, there were several bodies recovered, I understand, if you believe the folklore.
I'm going to say 9, maybe 11. I believe was the number. And there was a base out of Colorado that was heavily involved in the recovery.
Was that Lowry Air Force Base?
I don't remember, Jerry.
The reason I ask that comes up every once in a while as a place where ETA and supposedly bodies are.
And there may be some question on the date, the accuracy of the date, because there was a sighting in Farmington, which is just 30 minutes west of Aztec, I believe in 1949, and that made the headlines of newspapers because there was a tremendous amount of craft came across the city of Farmington, and that was seen by many, many people and reported in the local papers. So I'm not sure about the date, 48 or 49, but definitely believe that something happened at Hart Canyon.
I believe they have in the past, at least. Are they going to have some tours up to Hart Canyon this year?
Yeah, I think that's part of the symposium. They have tours, I believe, every day. You can drive up yourself. You can get a map, and it's easy to find, not hard to find, just east of town. And then I think they have people up there that explain their impression of what happened.
Typical New Mexico badlands.
It is. It's very barren country. They're a beautiful country, but extremely barren. And this Hart Canyon is a small mountain range. It runs just east of town. And when I went to the site, what I saw was that it had come in across a ridge and hit the ground and slid for a little bit and then embedded itself in the dirt. There is a concrete slab, a small concrete slab there, which nobody can explain. They say it's not anything to do with any drilling or anything like that. We're wondering if perhaps that concrete slab was placed to put a crane or some device for lifting.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
We have checked with different oil companies and things to see if there's any drilling done there, and so far we've not been able to determine what that concrete slab is. It's out in the middle of nowhere, really.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what comes out of the conference, and we'll be talking to you and some other people about that after the conference is over on this, because that's a very interesting idea. You know, that's not too far from Dulce either, right?
No. In fact, very close to Dulce, just east of there. New Mexico, for your listeners, New Mexico is one exciting place for this UFO activity because of what all has happened. You have Aztec, you have Roswell, then you have Lonnie Zamora, his case over at Socorro. Stanton Friedman talks about two craft with the Roswell incident, one at the plains of San Augustine, west of Socorro, and then the Roswell crash site here. So you had three different crashes within a 10-year period. You have Los Alamos, Sandia National Labs, two of the most secretive places in the world where they develop technology. You have White Sands, just 100 miles south of here from Roswell, in Farmington, which is just 30 minutes west of Aztec, I believe in 1949, and that made the headlines of newspapers because there was a tremendous amount of craft came across the city of Farmington, and that was seen by many, many people and reported in the local papers. So I'm not sure about the date, 48 or 49, but definitely believe that something happened at Hart Canyon up there.
Now, I believe they have in the past, at least. Are they going to have some tours up to Hart Canyon this year?
Yeah, I think that's part of the symposium. They have tours, I believe, every day. You can drive up yourself. You can get a map, and it's easy to find, not hard to find, just east of town. And then I think they have people up there that explain their impression of what happened.
What kind of, I guess it's, typical New Mexico badlands.
It is. It's very barren country up there, beautiful country, but extremely barren. And this Hart Canyon is a small mountain range. It runs just east of town. And when I went to the site, what I saw was that it had come in across a ridge and hit the ground and slid for a little bit and then embedded itself in the dirt. There is a concrete slab, a small concrete slab there, which nobody can explain. They say it's not anything to do with any drilling or anything like that. We're wondering if perhaps that concrete slab was placed to put a crane or some device for lifting, for support.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
We have checked with different oil companies and things to see if there's any drilling done there, and so far we've not been able to determine what that concrete slab is out in the middle of nowhere, really.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what comes out of the conference, and we'll be talking to you and some other people about that after the conference is over.
Okay.
On this, because that's a very interesting idea. You know, that's not too far from Dulce either, right?
No, in fact, very close to Dulce, just east of there. But New Mexico, for your listeners, New Mexico is one exciting place for this UFO activity because of what all has happened. You have Aztec, you have Roswell, and then you have Lonnie Zamora, his case over at Socorro. Stanton Friedman talks about two craft with the Roswell incident, one at the plains of San Augustine, west of Socorro, and then the Roswell crash site here. So you have three different crashes within a 10-year period. You have Los Alamos and Sandia National Labs, two of the most secretive places in the world where they develop technology. You have White Sands just 100 miles south of here from Roswell. So there's a lot of stuff going on in New Mexico that a lot of people don't know about.
When I was visiting you in Roswell last July, somebody came up and they started talking about a rumor that they were moving a lot of the Area 51 stuff up to Sandia Base.
Yeah, I'd heard that, Jerry, and I've got a contact up at Rachel, which is just outside of the base that doesn't exist.
Oh, yes.
Hasn't existed since 1955. He told me not too long ago that he had noticed they built a brand new gigantic water tank. And we're under the impression that most of the water there is contaminated because they have done so much radioactive testing. There were two guys, which you're familiar with, I'm sure, that died of radiation exposure. Their wives tried to sue the government and were not able to do it because the government said the place didn't exist. They'll never know what their husbands died of, but we know that they do toxic waste burning and things like that. And since about 1995, President Clinton started declaring a presidential proclamation every year, which Bush is continuing, and every year there is a presidential proclamation put out by the president saying that it's off limits to everybody for national security. They do not have to comply with environmental laws, which really bothers me because all industry in the United States has very strict environmental laws that they're enforced. And here you have this base that supposedly didn't exist for years that gets away with this stuff without anybody questioning it.
Yeah, that's pretty scary, especially even though there is a pretty desolate area up there. It gets into the water table, et cetera.
The ground and the subsurface ground up there is completely contaminated because of what all the testing they have done over the years at the Nevada test site and things like that. Plus now the fact that at Area 51 they're burning toxic waste above ground, and this is getting into the environment, I'm sure. I understand that ranchers and cattle are checked from time to time that are adjacent to the base and to see about radiation exposure. The base is the size of Connecticut. I mean, it's a large military.
Yeah, you're the one that told me it had 10,000 foot runway.
30,000.
Oh, 30,000.
It has two runways. One is 30,000 feet. That's 6 miles of paved runway, meaning that they're bringing something in at tremendous velocity to have that long runway. They have now the guards that surround the perimeter of the base. They're driving Grand Cherokees. Now they're using Ford and Chevy pickups. We recently got some pictures of some of their trucks. And the government license plate, the first two digits are the year of the truck. Like a government plate that starts with 99 would be a 99 model Chevy or Ford pickup truck.
And they cover that entire area. You can't be in there very long.
No, you can't get close. In fact, my contact up there recently, he was out of town, and while he was gone, the government came in, broke into his trailer, took his computers and all his pictures and cameras and negatives and all that stuff, and were trying to accuse him of being a terrorist, because what he found was a new sensing device located 25 miles outside of the border. And he saw this thing, picked it up, looked at it, and put it back. And where they're going to get him is for tampering with government property. But his question is, why do they need a sensing device 25 miles outside of the perimeter of the base? What's the story? I think he finally got all these things back, but for a while there, it's pretty touch and go with him, because they had basically come in and ripped him off on all the equipment and things he had in his house trailer.
I wonder how they knew that he picked up the sensing device and looked at it.
I don't know. He may have been seen. We don't know.
Yeah.
There is no fence around the base. It has markers about every 50 yards, which are nothing more than a post with a sphere on top. But the sensing device is the best in the world. They have detectors that can tell the difference between human and animal perspiration and temperature and things like that. So it's the highest security place I know of anywhere in the world. And as a researcher, it's a catch-22 situation, because we definitely need a place to develop our technology, our military aircraft and things like that, without our adversaries knowing about it. But on the other hand, if the stories about aliens and UFOs are true, then I think we deserve to know that information, because our future depends on it.
We're talking with Dennis Baupeiser. We've been talking about Area 51, which Dennis has been fascinated with for many years. I think that it's fair to say, correct?
Yeah, that's an understatement.
We have Dennis Baupeiser with us, MC, the second straight, well, you skipped a year in the middle there.
I did. I skipped one year.
Yeah, but you're back at Aztec, and it's going to be in a middle school this time, you say?
I think so, yeah. They've had it at several different locations. They had it in the theater, they had it at the Civic Center, and this year they're going to have it at the middle school.
Now, that's sponsored, or at least underwritten by the library, right?
Yeah, Friends of the Aztec Library. The bottom line is they're trying to get funds to improve the library in Aztec, and this was their way of raising money to do that, and it's worked out really well. The location, by the way, is Kugler, Kooglr Middle School, and that's at 455 North Light Plant Road in Aztec.
So they can just show up there and get tickets or whatever?
Yeah. Like I said, they have the meet and greet on Friday night. It's from 6 to 8 p.m., and then they have a local theater group that is doing a play at that same location called Stardust. I think that starts at 8 o'clock. And then Saturday morning, we kick off the speakers. We have 5 scheduled for Saturday in 2-hour blocks. And then Sunday, we have 2 more speakers plus a panel discussion at 1 o'clock with some guests that they haven't even told me who they're going to be yet.
And usually you stop around 2 or 3, right?
On Sunday we'll be through by probably 2 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Freddie Silva's going to be there. What about him? Do you know much about him?
Yeah, Freddie is going to be the last speaker, in fact, from 11 to 1 on Sunday. He gave up a lot of his successful career, a solid marriage and home and all that stuff, for what he calls trampled corn. His experiences of the formative forces at work and crop circles and sacred spaces were such that he felt they were important to share with humanity, so he's done doing research on that. He's the author of a book called Secrets in the Fields of Science and Mysticism of Crop Circles. So I have not met several of these speakers, Jerry, so I'm kind of looking forward to the lineup this year.
You know, it's one thing I notice when I go to these conferences is a lot of your fellow researchers make sure they go in and hear the lectures because they really haven't seen them.
Yeah. And I find as a researcher it's extremely difficult to get lectures, to find people or find groups that can get you in to do lectures. I'm thankful when that happens because that's one of the joys of doing the research is being able to share the information with the public through a forum of a lecture or editorial or whatever it is.
Art Campbell will be there as well. Do you know him?
I know of him, yeah.
I don't know him.
He's a Navy veteran of the Korean War. He served on aircraft carrier. After discharge in 54, he became interested in UFOs, and he actually worked with Donald Keeble as the director of the Kansas City's first NICAP chapter. And then in 58 and 59, I believe, he investigated the contact claim by George Adamski for NICAP. That was a well-known case back there. He's probably one of the few people who's talked to President Harry Truman about UFOs.
Wow, that'll be an interesting thing.
Yeah. His current project began in 1994 when he first visited the plains of San Augustine. And he saw something interesting, and it involved strange swath cut out of the bush there. He's been back to the plains many times, and he will share that information in his presentation. He's been an educator, art teacher, counselor, coach, and high school principal, and he's written for the Oregon Historical Society, and got quite a background.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. You know, you go the rundown of these people here at this Aztec conference, and it turns out that they're very interesting, like Nancy Redstar.
She's a last-minute lecturer, in fact. They were originally scheduling Dr. Craig, Roy Craig,
uh-huh,
as a speaker. And Dr. Craig is terminally ill with cancer.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either until I got involved this year. And all for the last few months, I guess, we've been trying to decide if he was going to make it or not, and finally got a letter from an email from his niece saying that he would not be able to make it. So they've invited Nancy Redstar, and she's a Cherokee bloodline on her mother's side. I'm not sure I even pronounce this right, Sovereign Abenaki Nation in Vermont.
Well, I'll let you pronounce it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask her about that. I have trouble with these Native American names. You have one in Oklahoma, Potawatomi?
Yes, we do, Potawatomi.
I used to destroy that.
We have all kinds of Indian names here. In fact, I grew up here, and I live on Old Mulgee Street,
right
in Muskogee, and you start telling people your address, and they go ballistic.
Yeah, well, that's like Socorro, New Mexico. People insist on calling it Socorro, you know.
Yeah, right.
But Nancy Redstar has a book out. She's the author of Star Ancestry Trilogy and Life of the Cosmos Clearance. She's been working with a select group of members from the Disclosure Project that was held at the National Press Conference in Washington, and I think she just completed a book, UFOs, No Threat, on that. She's currently working on an investigation documentary called The Bright Ones. And I think she's going to share that documentary with the audience. She lives in Taos and directs the Red Star Production Company there where the...
Yeah, she makes movies.
Yeah, the purpose of documenting and distributing the archives of extraterrestrial phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Well, Taos is a nice place.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in fact, a lot of places in Mexico are nice. You've been there some time now.
I've been up here since 96. I retired from the Texas Highway Department in 96 and moved up here to continue my research. I was with the UFO Museum here as the investigator and on the board of directors for 2.5 years and then became, I went independent to do it on my own now.
Talking with Dennis Valpreiser and noted UFO researcher, and we're talking about his second stint as the MC of the Aztec UFO Conference going on this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we're kind of running down the people going to be there. Mark
Kimmel?
Yeah.
Mark, I'm anxious to meet. He just wrote a book called Trillion. He claims that he writes stories about a backward planet where the people have not yet figured out they're part of the cosmos.
That sounds like it's biographical of a planet rotating around a sun, a third planet.
Yeah. I think it's going to be an interesting lecture because I think he's hit it on the head pretty well. He claims he gets to the heart of the matter and presents an uplifting vision of the future of the planet. He began in 1963 when he was shown a copy of the Project Blue Book, and which was supposedly a classified United States Air Force document about sightings. And then he wrote his first draft in 1997 while studying for his master. And he became convinced that we're not alone on this planet, that we're being visited by other off-planet civilizations and that they're wiser beings. And he wants to share their message with us. He lives in Southwest Colorado.
Scott Ramsey.
Scott I've known for several years.
Yeah, I know the name. I've never met him, I don't think.
Scott was very active in the Aztec Symposium, getting it organized and everything, and if anyone has done a lot of research on Aztec, it is definitely Scott. He lives in North Carolina, and during the past 16, 17 years, he's traveled to, I think, 26 different states, investigating the 1948 Roswell incident, and he's been several times to the Air Force Historical Archive, which is located at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama. He collected some 1,300 documents, either directly or indirectly involved. He's interviewed hundreds of witnesses, first, second, and third-hand witnesses connected to the Aztec incident, so I'm looking forward to his presentation also on Aztec.
And George Green is there too, is that correct?
George is one of them. I don't know George. I talked to him on the phone. He lives in Idaho. Background includes law and business at the University of Illinois, engineering at Colorado School of Mines. Been on a lot of the TV and radio shows. He's a former investment banker, securities underwriter, real estate developer, and insurance broker. He's published some 80 titles in the health field and politics, as well as UFO books such as The UFO Crash at Aztec I mentioned earlier, and UFO photos around the world.
Jerry Pippin, we're talking with Dennis Valpreiser, the MC for the Aztec Conference going on in Aztec, New Mexico. We have a toll-free number here. People want to get information. It's 1-877-823-5810, I think. Yeah, that's what I have. At least I think it's on the website. That's what it is. And you say it's sponsored by the library.
The Friends of the Aztec Library are the sponsors.
And the whole town seems to get behind this thing.
They do. They came to Roswell. They had a committee that came to Roswell during the, I believe it's 2000 symposium here, and talked to the local people here and got some ideas. And I helped them organize a little bit their first year. I was with the museum at the time here in Roswell. And they called and asked me if I could come up and do a lecture, and first one was a little rough at the edges, and they've really have improved it. And I have found over the years that they have a better representation of speakers, really, than they do here in Roswell now. They get a lot of good people in here for the yearly event, and it's a growing thing.
Well, I somebody told me, I've never been there, unfortunately, and I wanted to go this year, but as you know, I've been having a series of eye operations, and I just better not travel yet.
Mm-hmm.
I hear they have pictures and photographs and lots of things on display.
They do. They have a little museum downtown, a very small museum, but they do have some information there that's of interest to the public. The library itself has some information. There are several locations in town that you can find out about the Aztec crash.
And the Aztec crash and Dulce, of course, near there always fascinates me. And you've done quite a lot of research on the subterranean bases.
Yeah, I have. One of my topics, the four things I research are the 1947 Roswell incident, Area 51, which we talked about, underground bases, and that's primarily because of my background, my civil engineering background. That was fascinating to me to get into that. And 2 years ago, I was asked to join the Great Pyramid of Giza Research Association Advisory Board of the pyramids in Giza, which is also fascinating. But Dulce, I have been wanting to snoop around up there a little bit. In fact, I had a researcher from the East Coast. Him and I were going to go under the auspices of either a hunting trip or a fishing trip to go up and do some snooping. And he called me last year and said that he is completely getting out of the Dulce investigation because of the threats he receives and near accidents in his vehicle and things like that. He said every time he mentions Dulce, he has his problem with unsafe things happening.
Anything happening around you that you can't explain?
Not recently. The interception in Oklahoma in 97.
We have that on our website, folks. You go over at thejerrypippin.com, click on Dennis Balthizer's picture, and he tells a scary story there.
That's still under investigation, Jerry, and I've got a guy in California working with me, and that may have located some of the individuals, or we think so, and I have an FBI agent at church who I want to talk to, because if in fact that was a hoax, then I want to prosecute because they were impersonating federal agents.
Yeah, they came, you went to Stillwater to see this.
To get a piece of metal.
Yeah, that was probably of alien origin.
And from the Roswell incident, and never was able to meet the people. I was intercepted by two people that said they were United States Air Force Office of Special Investigation agents, and I spent 3.5 hours with them. Investigation went on for about 6 months, talking to about five or six different individuals, and finally I was threatened and told to back off, which I've not done yet.
For our new listeners, I don't think they're going to get you to blanket back off. You're kind of like me.
Well,
get a little stubborn.
With the Air Force, I look at it as I pay their salary. And, you know, if what happened in Roswell wasn't what we think it was, then tell us what it was and be straight with us, and I'll go fishing. But until they quit lying to us, and we've had four excuses on Roswell over the last 50-some years, you know, there has to be something behind this story. It just will not die. It won't go away. We've had hundreds and hundreds of witnesses. And our judicial system in this country is set up where one witness can determine the future of a criminal. He could be given life sentence or even execution based on the testimony of one witness. And we have hundreds of witnesses, but we can't get into the court system. And my theory on Roswell now recently has changed in that I think whatever was recovered here, they being the government, still haven't figured out what they have. And until they get all the military benefits out of whatever it was they obtained, I don't think they're going to go public with anything. They're going to deny it. Because we don't use anything in our daily life that the military hasn't already used. And if there's a military advantage to the technology derived from the Roswell crash, they're going to get that and use it for the military before anything goes public.
We will talk a little bit more about Roswell before we get off. I want to explain, get you to explain briefly about DOCE to people who are new to the UFO shows.
DOCE is, the rumors about DOCE are that it is an underground facility at least 7 levels below ground where aliens and United States citizens, military or government, work in conjunction with each other doing biogenetics.
Did I understand you correctly one time to say that they're on different levels?
Yes, yes. Yeah. The aliens, I believe, are on the 4th level, they said. There was a guy named Schneider who was an engineer who did a lot of the drilling for Area 51 and different underground.
Is this the guy that committed suicide with a piano cord?
That's him.
Okay.
He went public, and 6 months later, they found him in his apartment, dead.
That's a tough way to go. I don't think you can do it yourself.
I don't believe it's possible to do it yourself.
It'd be too much pain, I think.
Well, I think you'd give up.
Yeah.
I think you'd lose your pressure holding it together, for one thing.
Right.
I don't think it's possible that you can do that. But anyway, he went public saying that when they were drilling at DOCE, they broke through, and when they broke through, they found greys, aliens, and all but a few of the Americans were killed by some beam that they shot from their chest. He was hit, apparently developed cancer, but recovered, and then went public, and when he went public, 6 months later, they found him dead in his apartment. There have been many rumors about biogenetics taking place there on both animals and humans, reports of human body parts being there. There's just a whole lot with DOCE that nobody can explain. It's on the Jicarilla Apache Indian Reservation, which is a double safety thing for the government because you have the federal laws, state laws, and the Native American laws, so it can be pretty well protected. DOCE is a very small town, very low income, and there's a major hotel in the middle of town, which I've always wondered what the need for that was. But
well, it's been there for a while, so it must do some business.
Yeah, it's a tough place to research, and if you get too close to it, you start getting in trouble real quick.
That's convenient that hotel's there, but it's also convenient to check up on seeing who's there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Well, you know, we haven't talked about the pyramids, and I can't let you off the air here without talking about that.
Okay. Art, when I was asked to join the advisory board, John DeSalvo is the director out of Wisconsin of the Pyramid Association, the Giza Pyramid, www.gizapyramid.com. There are about 32 members on the advisory board from all over the world. Italy, France, United States, Ukraine, the former Russian province. The Russians are doing a lot of research on pyramids, and they have built fiberglass pyramids in the Ukraine. They are now finding that if seeds such as wheat or barley or seeds like that, agricultural products, if they're put inside the pyramid, their production increases 30% to 50%. Viruses don't grow. Water doesn't freeze at 32 degrees.
Wow.
Many things. And one of the researchers on our board spent 2 nights on top of the Great Pyramid on 2 different locations with equipment. He is absolutely convinced that the pyramid is an energy source. And they're the only structure of the 7 original wonders of the world that remain. My engineering background, when my last big job was the Houston Ship Channel, we had a bridge with a 1,200-foot span. When we got to the center, we were all 3 feet, and we cut a piece down the middle to bring the bridge together. That was pretty good engineering, 3 feet and 1,200. The pyramids are 1/4 inch on sides, within 1/4 inch. The stones that comprise the pyramid are within 1/50 of an inch.
When do you think that those pyramids were built?
My guess is 10, 15, 20,000 years ago, which predates the Egyptian civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're thinking that, two reasons. One, the Egyptologists and everyone says that the Great Pyramid was built for Khufu, for the dynasty of Khufu. The Arabs were the first ones to go in the pyramid in 820 A.D., and they found nothing in there except an empty coffer, a box with no lid. There were no hieroglyphics, there were no valuables of any kind, and they didn't bury any of the kings without all their possessions for the afterlife. So we're convinced that Khufu was not buried in the Great Pyramid of Giza. What was it built for? I don't know. But what triggered us was the Sphinx, the deterioration on the Sphinx, on the back of the Sphinx. And that, by the way, was covered with sand up to its neck until the 1800s. It was just uncovered about the 1800s. And the deterioration on the back of the Sphinx is from water, not from wind and sand. There has not been water in that part of the world, that amount of water, for 15,000 years, which predates the Egyptian civilization. Now, one of the researchers, Stephen Mueller, has a book out, The Land of Osiris. He is of the opinion that there was another civilization known as Kemetians that lived in North Africa. They were black and predominantly controlled by the female gender, by women. The Sphinx face does resemble a black woman. And we think maybe that face has been changed. We don't know if it was originally a lion's head to match the body or if it was the face of a person. But it's totally out of proportion with the body of the Sphinx. But the Kemetians supposedly had contact with star people. I got to be careful here. I'm not saying that extraterrestrials built the pyramids. What I am saying is if the Kemetians had contact with star people, they could very well have obtained the technology required to build the pyramids from the star people. And as an engineering background, it is impossible to duplicate the pyramids. You cannot build anything like the pyramids today with the equipment we have. We're talking stones that weigh 2 to 70 tons, 400 feet in the air. We believe that the building of it was done either through sound or vibration or water, telepathy, or by levitating or something like that. The Nile River is today 9 miles east of where it was when the pyramids were built. It has moved that much. There are tunnels being found underneath Giza that connect different pyramids and things together. And the three pyramids of Giza are the ones that we're concerned with because I do think that there are a lot of pyramids, of the 80-some pyramids in Egypt, a lot of them were built by Egyptians, but if you look at them structurally and technologically, they're a poor replica of the three in Giza. And that's true anywhere in the world, whether they be in Mexico or in Peru or in the Far East, wherever pyramids have been built, they're just poor replicas of the original three in Giza.
Hmm. You know, you mentioned the star people and Egyptian folklore, American native folklore, and Mexico is full of these stories of some connection somewhere.
Well, the Native American probably has more knowledge of the star system than any of our astronomers. If you get the opportunity to sit down with a Native American who has the knowledge of star people, they talk about the Seven Sisters, they talk about different things in the star system. They practically worship the stars. And their knowledge is so much compared to modern-day astronomy. It just blows you away that my problem with being on this board is that the toughest job we're going to have is to convince the Egyptians that the pyramids are not Egyptian.
Yeah, that would go contrary to what they've made a lot of money on.
Well, the tourism industry is tremendous. And if you watch this guy named Hollis that's on all those specials about the pyramids, he is definitely on the payroll of the Egyptian Tourism Committee. The man just doesn't make any sense a lot of times. He'll give an excuse for something and always relate it back to his ancestors, which just we just can't buy it.
You know, and the funny thing about that, Dennis, is that I think if they had evidence, or you had evidence, or somebody had evidence that the pyramids were built by either the advice of star people or whatever, that would, I don't think, would diminish the tourist aspect. I think it would encourage it.
Oh, I totally agree.
But you know, they don't see it that way.
It's like Roswell. I mean, to me, the truth is the most important thing. If it was something of ours that we screwed up on, admit it and be done with it. It's been 50-some years. If it wasn't, shoot us straight on what it is so we can go on and do something else. If nothing happened here, tell us. You know, don't keep giving us different excuses that make no sense. The last one they came out with in 97 about the crash test dummies was absolutely ridiculous. They shot themselves in the foot. The crash test dummies weren't used till 1953, 6 years after the event happened. So the Air Force has been trying to cover their butt with this thing, and I'm really tired of the runaround they're doing. I've got a Freedom of Information request on the Ramey photos that's been working for 3 years. I cannot get any information out of them on it. They won't take any responsibility for what they're saying in their reports. You know, it's just an unbelievably frustrating position.
So we have nothing new on that photograph that was uncovered?
Well, we're starting to read the photograph by analyzing and digitizing it, and the words victims of the wreck is definitely on there. Everybody agrees with that. There were no victims on weather balloons or mogul balloons. So, you know, tell us what we're looking at here. That's being held by General Ramey in his hand.
Okay, you got a good point. Let's talk about Roswell for a minute. You know, Darrell Sims is going to be back down there too, I guess.
I heard he's coming. I know for a fact that...
He wants to put together some kind of seminar or something. The reason I mention him is because we're talking about the American, the American Indian, and he's got a theory out now that the regular ETs, I don't know if you've talked to him about this or heard about this or not, that they're Native American in structure, but they're more blonde.
Yes, I have talked to Darrell.
And as you know, I was down there last year with Ben McIntosh, who's a full-blood Creek,
right,
and descendant of the Creek Nation chief of the same name. And I told Ben the other day, I said, you're going to go back to Roswell, and what you need to do is put on a blonde wig, and we'll go see Darrell. And I'll tell him, I said, I don't know, Ben just showed up here a couple of years ago, and boy, he's really been helpful.
you'll get Darrell going. I know three of the speakers, the guy is Stanton Friedman, Don Schmidt, and Tom Carey. Stanton, of course, is the granddaddy of Roswell.
And glad to see he's coming back.
Yeah, and Don Schmidt, Tom Carey have been working with the Sci-Fi Channel on the dig they did 2 years ago, or a year and a half.
Yeah, and Don Schmidt was there last year, wasn't he?
Yeah. And Don and I worked together, and Sam
right.
and I both worked together. And they're also bringing Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut.
Well, great.
I met Edgar up at Aztec 3 years ago. I was not speaking that year, but I went up because I had heard that Edgar knew something about Roswell. And he was the sixth man on the moon. And I got to talk to him one-on-one, alone outside, and I point blank asked him about Roswell. He said, Dennis, it happened. That's all I'll tell you. And then he also told me that we have two governments. We have a black government and we have an elected government. Then I asked him, I said, Dr. Mitchell, who do they answer to? He said, they don't. I said, they have to answer to somebody. He said, no, they don't. But he said, they control all the black projects and all the information that's not supposed to get out. It's a select group, and my thinking is that this may be a new Majestic 12 group, because the original MJ-12 group, they're all deceased, they're gone. But I believe that Henry Kissinger, George Bush Sr., and several others are probably part of his organization. I may get in trouble by thinking that, but that's something I have to say because I believe that.
Have you had a chance to talk to Stanton about this yet?
Yeah, a little bit, and we're working it.
Okay. We'll follow up on that in July when we're down there.
All right.
Hey, I think you may be right.
Well, Bush was head of the CIA before he became president.
Well, the one thing about the senior Bush was, if you look back over the history of the United States, every time something happened that there was trouble, George Bush seemed to be around. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the Golden Triangle and the problems of raising funding in the CIA, George Bush was there.
Yeah, and
Nixon gets in trouble, George Bush becomes head of the National Republican Committee. It's amazing. You open up China, and who's the envoy? George Bush.
Yep, you got it. I think probably Bush Sr. is probably one of the few presidents that would know any details about the UFO situation because of his involvement with the CIA. But most presidents probably are brief but don't know any details about it because they're temporary employees, 8 years max, so they can't be trusted.
You hear John Podesta, people from the Clinton administration talking about they just couldn't get any information.
Yeah, Clinton had got Hubble.
Right. Hubble, that's one of the reasons he put him in the Justice Department.
He wanted to know about the Kennedy assassination and UFOs, and Hubble reported back to Clinton that he can't find anything. So they have a lid on it, and there's only a select few people that are going to know about it. You and I are not included.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet.
But we're poking around.
But we won't give up
either. Well, for sure we're going to see you in Roswell. That's over the 4th of July again, right?
Right, and they're doing it a little different this year, Jerry. They're going to have all the authors will be located at the Civic Center, which is about 8 or 10 blocks north of the museum.
Right.
On Main Street. So we'll all be up at the Civic Center selling our books and tapes and things like that, and then the museum will have its regular thing going on down there.
And I guess really it just keeps growing.
It does. I heard numbers of anywhere from 20,000 to 45,000, 50,000 people this year expected. And they're bringing Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson in for a performance. I think.
Well, maybe you can get up there and play drums with Willie again.
I don't know if I'm going to be seen with him anymore. Willie's lucky to be alive.
In the I think Merle Haggard was there last year.
He was, yeah, sure was.
Well, he's an Okie from Muskogee, actually a little south of here, but they made that song famous.
That's right.
Let's not get off the air here without talking about the Aztec Festival one more time. People can call the library, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's the March 19th through the 21st. They have a toll-free number, 877-823-5810. They have an email, aztecufo@cisna.com. It's S-I-S-N-A. And it's located in Aztec, New Mexico, which is up in the southern part near Farmington. Beautiful country.
Yes, it is. And the thing kicks off at 5 o'clock, you say, on Friday.
Yeah, the meet and greet dinner or banquet is at 6 o'clock, and then the speakers begin Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, and I have them set up in two-hour blocks. So we have a speaker at 9, 11, 2, and 4. They'll also have a telescope viewing over at the Aztec Ruin National Monument on Saturday night at 7:30. And then Sunday, we have speakers at 9 and 11 in the morning, and at 1 o'clock, we have a panel discussion, and that may have some people that I don't even know who is involved in that yet.
You know, the interesting thing about Aztec and that part of the country is that you could spend a whole week there just sightseeing.
Oh, yeah. You're not too far from the Four Corners, where the four states and the only place in the United States is the as four states come together. Shiprock is a beautiful sight to see out in the middle of nowhere. Colorado is not just across the border. Cortez and Durango, they're interesting places to visit also.
Well, Dennis, I wish I could be out there with you, but we'll be checking back to see how it went.
Okay, and, we'll think about you.
And we do have a connection, folks, a link on our website to the information.
Okay.
And you need to check it out, and they'll make room for you if you just show up. And before I let you go, how about places to stay? I know a lot of Farmington's not too far away.
Farmington is only about 30 minutes, and they have a lot of good restaurants and hotels.
Yeah.
In Aztec itself, Step Back Inn is located on Aztec Road. Let's see, there's several bed and breakfasts in there. Probably can call the library or the Chamber of Commerce and find out what's available.
Dennis Balthizer, I look forward to seeing you again in July, and it's always a pleasure having you on the air.
My pleasure, Jerry.